This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors of our dominant culture and parent with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Calvin Wijaya, where we talked about what it means to be a third culture kid. All right, I want to welcome to the show Lainey Liberty. Lainey is the founder and creator of Transformative Mentoring for Teens. She is a certified life coach specializing in confidence coaching. Awesome. That sounds awesome. Lainey is the co-founder and facilitator of Project World School, a company she launched with her then teenage son. Project World School retreats are designed for teens, inspiring temporary learning communities around the world. Lainey has lived in communities with teens of over 20 international locations, facilitating exploration of the outer worlds as a vehicle for reflection in the inner worlds. So cool. So excited to have you, Lainey.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. This is such an incredible topic, and I'm glad that you do focus on family culture. How important that is.
Oh. That's so important. So I dedicated a whole podcast. I just love it. I just love being able to facilitate the conversations on even a variety of topics and relating them to family culture, because I really think that it's important to have these conversations and relate them back to our families. And so I'm excited to be talking about world school mindset and mentality and what that looks like. But first, just to get to know you, tell us, what was something you wanted to be when you were a kid?
Wow. Okay. So I always wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. That was my dream. As a kid, I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. I'm in my 50s now, and I remember watching it with Jim Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And
classic.
I remember watching it. And as a kid, I would stay up very late with my parents, and it was my favorite show. And I remember at the very, very end, where all the actors and the cast are standing and they're waving, and the credits are rolling. And I, as this little girl, would get up. I was the most excited part because I thought they were waving at me, and I'd get up and I'd start waving to the TV, and I would always say, I'm going to be on that show. So that's what I wanted to be when I was
a kid.
That's
so cool. That's so cool. I can relate, because I would watch Star Search when I was a kid. I always wanted to be on Star Search. So how do you think that inspired who you became? Did it continue, how did it inspire you to be who you are now?
Well, I took a totally different path. My career obviously did not go. I did not end up.
Not anytime.
But what it did was inspire me as, sort of a side hobby to take improv classes. Okay. And through improv classes, I learned the principles of saying yes. And not only saying yes, but yes and. I learned the principles of win-win, or taking what's given and building upon that. There's so many principles in improv. I've seen people use improv in business and other
different
absolutely. Things. It's such a powerful strategy. And I use it when I facilitate the teen retreats. Like, we do improv as icebreakers. We do improv as practicing these themes like support and, taking what somebody's given you and adding on to it and accepting it, giving it back, like that whole sort of back and forth. I work with teens, but I also work with families. So yeah, it gave me, thank you, Dan Aykroyd.
Right. That's really powerful. Yeah. I mean, I've 100% that whole acting and improvisation, there's so much to it. And it's like, everybody should take an acting class at some point in their lives.
Improv.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's a little different. Okay. Yeah. Improv. Okay. Everybody should take them. Awesome. No, that's really cool. I love that. That gives me an insight into so much about you, and that whole improvisation is so powerful. That's so cool. So, I'd like to go into your topic. And the question I like to ask is, what is one dysfunctional belief or behavior in the dominant culture that you believe needs to change?
Well, I know that you differentiate between family culture and dominant culture. I would say that a lot of times people don't even consider family culture. And as somebody who helped build the whole world schooling movement, and I've worked with families for years, I've hosted conferences twice a year in different parts of the world. I've got a huge Facebook group. And for me, it's really been about ways to facilitate and empower families that wanted to travel and combine travel with education for their children and for their family. And the primary limiting belief is not even putting effort into defining the family culture. The belief is, oh, we're a family. We already have our culture. Oh, we already know how to be together because, well, we're a family. And so that kind of, I don't know if that comes from the dominant culture per se, but it comes with not questioning your belief system. And it also comes with not applying an intentionality to the act that you're about ready to embark on. Now, I work with families who travel. Mm-hmm. Family culture is so important because for many of these families, it's the first time that they're together for a long period of time. Like, you know, conventional life, you know, adults go off to work, kids go to school, everybody has schedules, agendas, responsibilities, they have their own space. It's almost preordained. But when you start traveling or you start spending time together, the mm-hmm. things that didn't work, but you didn't realize didn't work, are amplified. And if you haven't spent the time or the energy to put into creating and defining a family culture, then you've got no foundation to go on, because what was before didn't work. Now, in a time of COVID, many families are facing the same thing. Even though they're not moving, they are now together in sharing space in a way that they never did before. So I've been giving workshops on how to create family cultures and why it's so important. And what we've learned through the world schooling community can be applied to every single family right now. And it's, you know, tested and true. And just as you do, you know that defining and having that real intentionality behind family culture is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I love everything you just said. You're exactly right. Like, that's why I, this is my mission, is I want to help people to recognize that there is a family culture, that there is this underlying this undercurrent in the dominant culture that is our family, right? But actually, the family is what defines, it all defines out from our families in a lot of ways, even though the dominant culture impacts a lot of what we do. You know, I talk a lot about how there's family culture on the micro level, which is what's happening within our families. And then there's what's happening on the macro level, which is what's happening to our families, right? To on the outside of our families that impacts our families and then our society and the systemic problems or beliefs and things like that, right? And so I love what you're saying, that you almost don't recognize. I always say, right, every family has a culture, whether by design or by default, right? But so many of us are on default. It's almost like we just climb in this vehicle, go on this trip, and we're going to stay on the highways and get there as fast as we possibly can, quote, right? Like, we don't want any detours. We don't want any sidetracks. We just want to get there and stay on our devices the whole time while we do it, right? And so you're exactly right. Like, we don't ever take the time to look each other in the eyes and coexist in a way that we have to face each other's demons or our own demons. And until when we do, it's a crisis. We're going, what happened? Who are we really? So that could be a traumatic experience. So that's fascinating that's what you facilitate in a lot of ways and then help coach people through that process. That's awesome. Yeah,
absolutely. And we sort of use a different verbiage. You talk about macro and micro. We talk about the lenses through a world schooling view, right? Worldviews are absolutely like at the foundation of not only family culture, but the way that your family fits within the world and the way that we see the world and the way that we see those in the world with us. And a lot of those lenses, like you and I are both wearing glasses. We know that we go to the optometrist and they put those like little lenses in and out to be able to see clearly. I see it as that. And I see it as within the family culture, the ability to create dialogue, to practice taking these lenses out, putting them in, and recognizing that others have different lenses. And what does it look like as a connective force? What does your family, coming from a place of their family values, right? Like I talk about that too. Like I've got this whole step program of, you know, how to help define your family values and your culture. But one of those things is bringing your perspectives through the lens of your family values and understanding that even you have the ability to take the family values out and see as neutrally as possible and make space for other potential viewpoints. And this is most important too for world schoolers or for those that really want to have the lens of a global citizen, which is right now so important, whether you're traveling or not.
Absolutely.
How you interact with the world and where your family is coming from, it's so important to have that clarity.
I love that. And I think that's so fascinating. You said to look through the lens of not having those values there to blur, because I think sometimes when we're in our family union, we don't recognize, oh, we have a culture and we're not facing this reality or things. We get stuck in what we believe are family values. And then we get stuck in judgments. And we get stuck in, you know, prejudices and things like that, right? And to take away that lens doesn't mean, oh, I'm just going to throw away all my values. It just means you're going to approach things from a non-judgmental perspective, right? Like, is that how you would say that?
It means you're making space for differing perspectives to live side by side, right? And like if, you're from the United States. Right now in the United States, the culture is a culture of divisiveness. We've got enough of that. We've practiced that. Great. Done. We don't need that anymore. No. What we need is the practice of having two differing points of views and understanding that everybody's lenses are different and they can sit side by side. And I'll give you just a quick real world perspective, you know, in terms of traveling. So let's say a family is absolutely, one of their values is about inclusiveness. Maybe another value is about equality. Okay. And in some cases, when you're traveling around the world, these two things don't actually work together. So let's say we're going to Japan and we're going to learn about the traditions of the geisha. Okay, so we're looking at a tradition of servitude and service, and there is absolutely not non-equality. So if a family was holding on to the value very, very strongly, very tightly, that equal rights is the only way to see the world, and I could only look through those lenses, and that would prevent that family from engaging about learning about a cultural practice that is historic, that is a rich part of the tradition of that country with judgment, right?
Right.
We want to explore the world and its multitude of ways of seeing without judgment, and equality and inclusion may not be part of that formula in that circumstance. So how do we put this aside and allow this other thing to live side by side without being in judgment of it, with allowing it to be there. So it's powerful. And creating the dialogue within your family about that, bringing consciousness to it, that practice will help, you know, our families raise adults that are able to have these conversations, that are able to practice those sorts of values and tolerance and et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So what are some of the, what would you say are some of the barriers that are keeping families from looking through these different lenses? You know, what is it that's keeping us stagnant and unable to change?
Well, I think there are really two main things. I think the first one is the just simple non-awareness that bringing consciousness to family culture, and along with that, not having tools to build the family culture. So I didn't know family culture was a thing. Okay, now you're telling me it's a thing. I don't know how to do it. Like those, that is one of the big barriers. And then the second barrier is sort of the I guess the word would be unwillingness to shift anything because the belief is, oh, our family's fine as is. I just don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah.
So that unwillingness to go to a place where it's uncomfortable, where it requires showing up, being present, it requires compromise and listening and honoring the rest of the unit that you call a family. When I do my workshops, I talk a lot about family governance, and there are many ways of approaching it, and there's no right or wrong way. But one of the ways that I shy away from, and I don't think I've ever worked with anybody who chose an authoritarian paradigm, but those that really are holding on tight to the idea of, I am the parent, I am the one who's making the rules, I am the authority, and you do what I say. That this type of family who holds on to that belief system or that style of family governance has a hard time really adjusting to creating a family culture, being able to open up to differing worldviews and that sort of thing. Like those that work on democratic or consensus-based, which are the other two type of governance or decision-making processes, have a much easier time shifting into it. So it's a lot of, you know, self-awareness, using tools, intention, like you've got to get buy-in from the whole family. There's, again, inclusion.
Yeah.
But if you're coming from the authoritarian paradigm, I don't even think there's space to go there. So
right. It's unfortunate because it's like, those are the families who need it the most, right? It feels like. And it's like, come on, wake up. And it's this attitude of, well, that's just how it's always been done. Or, you know, they aren't willing to take on the, or question the paradigms or the beliefs, the narratives that they brought with them from their families, from their parents. And which, as soon as you come into a family, you marry somebody outside of that, that social norm or those social constructs. Well, there's no way to survive. How do you even survive that? That's where, you know? And so, cause it's like, well, if one is, cause I've seen this happen when it was like one of the couple was, well, my culture, I come from a culture that is very authoritarian, and the other, I come from a culture that's not, we're very open-minded or, you know, things like that. Well, as soon as that person thinks that they're authoritarian, I'm going to overtake this controlling this relationship. The other person's like, well, I'm out. How do you even solve that? It becomes a conflict that is almost insolvable if somebody in the relationship is not willing to be open-minded and flexible to look through those different lenses.
Yeah, it's so true. And when you're dealing with that circumstance that you're talking about, you're dealing with habitual thinking. You're dealing with belief systems that have never historically in the life of that person been questioned. And it's like if you had a truck and you had a house in the middle of the wilderness, and you drove the truck to that house once and you kept going back down that same path, those grooves have gotten really deep. Instead of like, you know, trying to figure out other ways, mm-hmm. you keep going on the same groove until you don't have to think about how you got there. That's just it. That's reality. And so there's got to be the willingness from that person to step back and want to make a change. If that willingness is not there, then you could never find another way to that house in the wilderness. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep. I like the analogy. It's good. Yeah, absolutely. And unwillingness to grow and change. It's hard. It's hard to, I've talked to people where, you know, I'm going, you know, this is what I do. I teach about family culture. And like, oh no, we're fine. We're fine. And it's like, great. But I mean, it's becoming so ingrained and comfortable, right? Like it becomes so, the word is it's comfortable, but it's, what is the word I'm thinking of? Like, and not necessarily passive, but just kind of, oh, I've forgotten the word that I wanted to say. It's just kind of, oh, I'm going to blank. I'm going to be frustrated that I can't remember the word. It's just becoming, it's kind of like passive or just, it's not laziness because it's just complete. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm not trying to pass judgment on families. I just want to be able to reach in and be like, I want to help. You know, if you can envision your family together like this in 20 years, then fine. Okay. But if you see and envision in 20 years that this is not going to work, then we need to come up with a new plan.
Right. Right. So it depends on that person. If at the root of not wanting to change is fear or simply not knowing any different, you know, you can approach both of those very differently. You can address those issues very differently. But on the flip side, if they are desiring connection, authoritarian parenting doesn't do it. And so looking at it from what it is that you're missing might give a hint to how to approach it. And I always see, too, when you've got two people from different cultures, whether it's family culture or like a country culture, whatever, mm-hmm. religion, background, it doesn't matter, coming together, you are creating another culture. And that gives you permission to define what that looks like. You can build the boundaries, the walls, the rules, the governance, you know, the government, however you wish. You have full permission. And if you build it one way and it doesn't work, you can adjust. So that's like the empowerment of a single family. You've got power within your family. And if you approach it from a consensus or even a democratic perspective, you've got way much more power than just the one person saying, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the word that I was going to say because it was casual, right? Oh. It's, you know, if you, right. Ugh. Anyway, but yeah, it's like this idea of there's both that both extremes, right? If you're going to be casual about it and just go with the flow, or you want to be dominating and unwilling to change. And so it's like, no, we want to create and introduce that other option. Like you say, of saying, no, we want to create connection. We want to be able to have that permission to create a new culture. I love that. That's really where like my experience with family culture comes from, is coming together. You have to come together because husband and wife, couple, they're going to come together and they're both going to come from two different cultures, whether even if they live in the same town, you know, just coming from two different families. And so, you know, you're going to have to come together and facilitate a brand new culture.
And even like I did it very intentionally as a single parent with a single child.
Yes.
So we intentionally decided on our core values. We decided how we were going to make decisions. We decided to honor and acknowledge when one person comes from logic and thinking and brain and the other person comes from emotion, heart. And we defined a language to be able to meet somewhere in the middle. Like we brought intentionality to this, you know, our, it was going to be our travel culture, which became 12 years. So we're still doing it. So like, it just became the family culture. It was very, very intentional. And by helping to facilitate, as you do, other families to define theirs, their lives have shifted in such a way that the connection is guaranteed.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. And yes, thank you for bringing that up, that you and your son can create that, because every person in the family, whatever your family looks like, you are together facilitating your yeah. unique family culture. And that's beautiful. So I love this. Okay, so I love that you talk about world schooling and that the power that has to bring family culture to light and to help families and teenagers is part of your work to open their minds to possibilities of culture and of a world, different worldview, and looking through these different lenses. So what are some of the things that you suggest around in that context of world schooling that can help families to facilitate an intentional family culture and start looking through these different lenses?
Well, I did mention, you know, your values, that mm-hmm. to me is one of the most important aspects of building the intentional family culture. But beyond, and the governance, right?
Yes.
So
yep.
that's important too, deciding how you're going to make decisions and then deciding what the consequences are of if you choose, say, a democratic process, that means mm-hmm. majority wins. That means somebody's voice didn't get heard. What are the consequences? What does that look like within the family culture? How does that then play out? So, like, really creating dialogue around all of these subjects that people just generally don't talk about, right? So it's the practice of playing, of, you know, creating dialogue around that. And then once you know what your family values are collectively, it helps with decision making as well, because you can ask, is this in alignment with the values of my family? But then I would also say two other things that you should keep in mind as a tool, and that would be play with it. Create themes that your family can play with. And maybe one theme is this month we're going to live as another culture. And during lockdown, we can live and you know, look up another country around the world and eat the food they eat and use the utensils that they eat, and then talk up and listen to the music and try and take in some of the language and sit on the floor if that happens to be part of that family culture, whatever it is, and try and see the world through their lens, and then talk about the lenses that you're perceiving it through, like as an American or as a Canadian, since we don't do this, it seems weird, or I miss my thing. Well, why did you miss your thing? Is it comfort? Are you comfortable being outside of your comfort zone? Most Westerners are not. So yeah. Talk about that. Give that language. Talk about the differences between needs and preferences, and really decide as a family where you sit, you know, where what it means to you, and how, and figure out if that can bring compassion and empathy into your family culture as you're looking at the world, creating other, you know, interaction between other cultures. So I think the two go hand in hand. I think, you know, creating a practice around understanding worldviews and having dialogue about that. And then the second thing, I said I was going to give you two things. First one was the theme. The second thing is to create some sort of family traditions that are uniquely yours. So whether it's a weekly check-in or a family meeting or a dance party scheduled for every Tuesday afternoon, whatever it is, create your family traditions and have the input. So, you know, oh yeah, my family does that, you know, and each one is going to be uniquely different, but, and those things too can shift with time as you outgrow them and want to bring in new traditions and create the space to create dialogue around all of those things. Stay in dialogue.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And I love that whole idea of the themes. When you were talking about that, it reminded me of a friend of mine. Their family would celebrate Christmas with a new, different cultural theme every year. And it made me think about that, this concept of if you are going to learn about these different cultures, be willing, like, I love that you need to have the open dialogue, because I picture my friend celebrating Christmas different every year. Maybe it doesn't include the traditional Western Christmas traditions. And some people would be uncomfortable with that, right? They'd be like, oh, but we always celebrated Christmas this way. And they'd start panicking, right? Getting anxious about this idea of different, this isn't right. This feels weird or something. Well, have a dialogue about that. Open up the conversation. And that's a perfect opportunity. If you are exploring these different themes of different cultures and different worldview and culture, global cultures, then be willing to open up a conversation and being willing to recognize, why is that making you uncomfortable? Let's have a conversation about it. Like, is Santa Claus the only cultural recognized Christmas time, or, you know, no, let's, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And if we don't do it that way, that's okay. And so, I mean, I love that, because like in my family, yeah, we do Santa Claus, but it's not like, we worship Santa Claus. Okay. Like, you know, it's just part of the tradition. It represents kindness and charity in our family, you know, but that's only because we grew up in a Western culture that celebrates Santa Claus. But for us, we're like, but we don't want him to be so central to the celebration that if we said, you know what, no Santa Claus this year, that everybody be freaking out or something, like, what? That's wrong.
So
it's just different.
It's just different. And I can share with you one of the practices that my son and I did throughout his entire childhood, surrounding the holiday season, which, you know, it's a really unique way of looking at it. So, I'm Jewish, and that makes my son Jewish. And culturally, that is that's what we were born into. Religiously, I didn't grow up in a practicing family. So I've always identified culturally as a Jewish person. But that's a little sort of confusing around the holidays, right? So yes, we had the menorah, and yes, we did the candles every night. But I really wanted to bring a sense of gratitude into the whole holiday season. So from the time that my son was born, I started writing out questions surrounding the theme of gratitude. And we had what we called our Hanukkah cards. And every night, and I, over the years, had more than 200 of them. And they were on cardstock, and they, you know, I had them print. I printed them out. You know, lovely, lovely tradition. We always sort of put them away. And then during Hanukkah, we took them out. And every night we did the menorah, and we talked about, you know, this is the culture that we were born into. We give presents, but it's time now for the reflection part. So the questions were always like, why are families coming together this time of year? What are the qualities that are most important to families around the world? Families that don't have Christmas trees or menorahs, what are they grateful for? How do we see the world, you know, during holiday time as a place of giving when not everybody has stuff? Like, you know, so like there were always like these very intellectual, forward-thinking, worldly questions. And this is way before I even knew we were going to travel. But we brought that sense of global citizenship into our holiday tradition, as well as for us, it was a theme of gratitude. And much later, when my son and I started our Project World School, which I haven't talked about, right now we're not traveling, but for 7 years, we'd bring teens to different parts of the world, and we'd live in community and have these immersive learning experiences. Every single night, of course, I developed a whole new deck of cards. We would sit in circle and we'd pull a card. That was the last thing we did every night. And everybody pulls the card and asks questions like, how do people in our host country define value or define wealth? how does that differ from our kind? You know, that sort of exercise of looking at the world through different lenses, but also being able to sit in dialogue with that, because sometimes those are very difficult questions to answer. But that's something my son grew up with during the holidays. For him, holidays is totally different. And we've celebrated lots of Christmases with lots of different families around the world and participated in so many different traditions that, but we can see the string that holds humanity together. And it's really that sense of coming together and gratitude.
That's so beautiful. I love that. I love that string of humanity idea. Like, that's so cool to be able to just be able to connect with humanity and say, well, we're all one human race. Like, we just love and connect, want to connect and be inclusive, that we don't have to create all these divisions or animosity and contempt, right? Like, why? Go ahead.
Even bringing Santa Claus back into it, the world sees Santa in different ways, and he pops up in different traditions as different characters. And that would be a beautiful journey through Santa, you know, for younger kids. Yes, we know the American Santa, but let's talk about the Hungarian Santa, you know, or St. Nick, I think they call it. Or you'd have to look up.
No. That's so cool. That's so cool that there are connections that we can make, that we can say, well, oh, here are some similarities in our cultures that we can relate with. That's so cool. That's really cool. I love that too, because, you know, as you were describing this idea of like, and when I was even saying my friend changing up her Christmas traditions every year, it's like, so I like that you talked about how you kept that your Hanukkah tradition, you know, that even though we're talking about, you know, looking through different lenses and finding different things, that you can adopt something that is consistent for your family, and that that's nothing wrong with that either. That in fact, that can be the thread of what you're creating within your family, that you've come together and said, we are coming together, creating a new culture. And these are the things that we want to be consistent throughout our culture, and taking inventory of what maybe our ancestors, our parents did, and deciding consciously, intentionally, whether or not those are traditions and things that you want to keep in your family, in your new culture.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to get into this, but I would just sort of drop this little seed. If you are interested in creating your own family tradition, I would start looking at rites, traditions, rituals, myth around the world, and look at it from the First Nations people. You're going to find that before the westernization of the planet, traditions and rites and rituals were like at the center of every culture. It's interesting how Western culture, we've lost a lot of that. So the permission to create your own unique family culture with your own rites and rituals and traditions is just so empowering.
That is cool. That's really, I love that you planted that seed. That's awesome. That's really cool idea. Awesome. Okay. I just love this conversation. I love that you know, bringing in this worldview perspective that, you know, even right now, even if you can't travel or if you aren't going to be doing this world schooling, that we can introduce cultural differences into our family. And that's so powerful to be able to look through these different lenses. It's so important. It's something that it's like, well, because, you know, when I talk about family culture, sometimes I'll be like, you know, family culture is that thing where it's like, if you have two fish swimming in the water and another fish swims by and goes, hey, how's the water? And the other two going, wait, what's water? You know, and that's kind of like what our family culture is. If you aren't real, and until you find yourself in a different pond, you're going, something's different here, you know? And so getting in those different ponds, getting and exploring different things, it's going to help you open up your eyes, not just looking different lenses, even just opening your eyes in general to, you know, the fact that there's something that you've created here, whether by intention or not, that is your family culture. And so it's just, being willing to open up your eyes, look through those different lenses, so powerful and so important. That's awesome. So will you tell us a little bit more about world schooling and what that is about?
Sure. In essence, world schooling is for anybody who wants to look at the world around them as a rich environment to learn from. The majority of world schoolers take the act out on the road and travel, and you know, the family culture part is super important, as I talked about in the beginning, when a family is together in an outside of their comfort zone sort of situation for a long period of time. So, you know, having that as the foundation is super important, but it's also the combination of worldviews, as we talked about, mm-hmm. and the combination of incorporating world cultures that are, you know, history, cultures, all different aspects of learning as a part of our world. And sometimes, like, again, I'm an American. I wasn't raised with this awareness that the world was so big. I was raised with a love of the world. Like, my favorite book growing up was my atlas, and I was constantly looking through it. So I had this draw, but until I started traveling, I didn't quite understand that, oh my gosh, people are different everywhere. And instead of just seeing the differences, I made a true effort to see the commonalities and to build those bridges. So I really think bringing the world into your family at a young age and having those conversations can be part of your family culture. That's so important. So world schooling is doing all of those things. I could talk more about what it looks like when you're traveling, but right now it's not really relevant. But I do want to say the other thing that I do is my core work is working with teenagers and helping teenagers. I mean, this really is a world schooling issue too, because during adolescence, teens are figuring out how they fit in the world, where their niche is, what it is that they stand for. It's about those values again. What mark they're going to make, which culture they're going to follow, or which, you know, influence is going to be a part of their reality. They're making all of these decisions during their adolescence. And traveling, of course, is one of those perfect combinations. You know, you could actually, like I said, explore the outer worlds in order to have the dialogue for the inner worlds. Mm-hmm. But without travel, right now, I just think exploring the inner worlds is so important, especially when the world looks really different. So, yeah. So that's what I do right now. I've been working with teens one-on-one. I have a 12-week course that's launching for teens that's online, launching in September. But it's about creating the dialogue and having a safe space to explore all of these things.
That's so cool. I was going to ask you, what is the next thing that's coming up? So will you tell us a little bit about the 12-week course?
Sure. It is for teens around the world. I've got teens signed up I've got one from South Africa, a bunch from the US. I'm hoping to have some from all over Europe. It'd be lovely. And it's really a place where we are looking at, you know, limiting beliefs. Some of them are from dominant cultures that we just live within. It's looking at ways to question those beliefs. It's looking at ways to get beyond habitual thinking. It's looking at ways to create connections, you know, like wiring in our brain and to support ourselves through lives or them through life. In terms of making those connections, in terms of, you know, without getting too deep into the monthly content, 1 month is about the self. The next month is really about the connection between self and social and what that means. And all of the months are built with tools and exercises and, you know, check-ins and accountabilities. And the last month is really about goal setting and research and passion and tapping into passion. And when you're doing this kind of work in a community, in a safe space, it's powerful. Teens, you know, This is the time where social learning is the huge like influence in their learning. So it's an incredible course. I wish I had a course like this when I was a teenager.
Right. Right. That's so awesome. So awesome. So is that, let's see. So that's at, is that the, weareworldschoolers.org?
That's no. That's at Transformative Mentoring for Teens. So I do one-on-one mentoring, and then I have this course coming in September. The weareworldschoolers.org, anybody who's interested in the world, please come to our website or go to the We Are World Schoolers Facebook group. It's such a lovely community. We've got about 9,000 people and it's active and people are constantly sharing ideas. Since the lockdowns, we've been doing a lot of community events that were virtual. Before they were like meetups in different places in the world, and now it's all virtual, but there's so much inclusion. I really have built a culture of tolerance and inclusion there. And you'll see my face in that group, you know, every week. You know, I'm constantly in there and I'm doing lives and we're having dialogues and we're talking about different things and I bring people in to speak. And it's an incredibly wonderful, inclusive place. And then the website supports that community. So you're welcome. Everybody's welcome. You just have to answer a few questions. That's the barrier to entry.
Yeah. Do answer the questions.
Or they'll say no.
Yeah. That's awesome. So cool. Thank you so much, Lainey. I really enjoyed talking to you and just learning from you. And I just love what you're doing. And there is one thing, other thing I want to bring up, because I have my Family Success Toolbox. It's a free membership that I curate some content. And will you tell us about this? You have 30 days free to the We Are World Scrollers Community Club. Will you tell us about what that is?
Sure. That is 30-day free access to our website content. There's a bunch of content that's up there for free. There's blogs and interviews and stuff, but the majority of the content within the website is for our membership. Membership members. And within that, we also do a weekly coaching. So it's a group coaching and it's powerful. And then of course, we also have a women's circle and there's a lot of other stuff. But the website itself, there are expert interviews, there are resources, there are articles. So on all different aspects of world schooling, from location and independence, like the work part of it, to the actual education and learning part, to the health and wellness, and then community aspects. So if you're interested in the world at all, and you really want to bring in the world schooling philosophy into your family, especially during lockdown, if you're feeling isolated, this will open up the world to you. So be my guest. Be my guest for 30
Thank days. You. Thank of you. Course. I'm excited to share that with my audience and so excited. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you, Lainey. Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss my next episode with John Lee Dumas. We talk about what is missing when we are raising our children to be entrepreneurs. Again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Help more people find the show. Download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Success Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember to set your intentions for your family culture and lead your family toward your vision of success.